Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going, everybody? Evan, Lee, T's and Evan, Real Talk, episode 203, I believe, and today's episode is going to be the classic style debate, Real Talk style. Is anybody here?
Yeah, we're here.
What's up, guys? What's up, guys? How we doing?
I'm good, bro. I'm just chilling. How you doing?
Good, good. Happy to be here. Happy to break down these, you know, these topics today. So, you know, it's a very stormy Wednesday out here, but that's what we're doing. So,
yeah, my cousin's actually going out there right now. Your way, Evan. My cousin's going to, I think he's on his driving. Like, he's driving to New York. He's not really your way, but he's in your way somewhere. I think so.
I got you. Yeah, of course. I'm literally like 2 seconds away from New York.
Yeah, my cousin's driving out there. He's on his way. I was just on the phone. He's on his way out there right now. Shout out to him. But yeah, we're gonna get into these classic debates now. You got a list of topics for us?
I do. You know, where we just go straight into it, break it down. You know,
I just want to say one thing before we get into it, break it down. I want to say one thing for the people listening. So the thing is this, right? So we decided to go back. We've been talking about it, how we used to have these classic debates on Twitter. That's actually the foundation of how our show started. So that's the reason why, you know, Lee actually came up with this idea for doing a show like this. And he was like, man, that's pretty much how we got this whole thing together, was just debating back and forth on Twitter, having this style of debate. That's kind of how our show was built. You know, it was built on that type of debate. So he was like, let's do a show about it. And I was like, I think that's a dope idea. And Evan was feeling the idea as well. So tonight we're going to, you know, get back to our roots a little bit and do a show based off those debates. And Evan's got a list of topics for us. So we're going to get into it.
Should I go in order of the way you sent them to me, Keith, or just kind of flip-flop? Up to you.
I'm
the moderator, that's true.
This is what I think. How about this? Evan, pick out the one. Pick them out. You don't have to go in the order they are. Just pick out the one that you think is, you know, the most intriguing to you. You know, put that one out first. And then, you know, if you want to, throw in, you know, you can even kick off what you're – stance on the question. So pick out the one that's the most intriguing to you to answer, and then if you want to answer it, and then me and Lee will answer it.
Okay.
No. You gotta let me and Keys give our take first, and then you give your take at the end.
Okay,
cool. So we'll do it that way then. But Evan, still pick out the one that's most. Pick out the one you like the most, and then me and Lee will have our debate, and then give us your take on it after.
I think I'm going to start with this one because I've been seeing it a lot on Twitter recently, and I think it's a good one to start with. And it's number two from the list you sent me, Keys, and it's who is the featherweight greatest of all time?
You can go first, Keys.
All right, so this is what I got. So I think my pick is a little bit more based on the fact that, first of all, this individual is still going and is the only one out of pretty much the only three or four, possibly five. I think it's usually like the same four. There's like about four names that get floated around for this the featherweight goat talk. There's about four names that I usually see. But this one is the only guy that I feel like is really still showing dominance in the division, or is even still fighting and is also one of the only ones still fighting in the division, never mind still breaking records in 2021. I got Max Holloway as my featherweight goat. Without a doubt. It's also partially, you know, the fact that I didn't see the WEC days. You know, I didn't see WEC Aldo. You know, a lot of people reference that when they, you know, people that do have Aldo usually reference the WEC days, which is understandable. I mean, that's not a bad point to bring up. I just didn't see it. So it's hard for me, you know, to have him as my GOAT. Based off what he's done in the UFC, I think he's done some pretty great things in the UFC as well. But, I mean, when you have a guy like Holloway, to me, who went on, I want to say, I think a nine or ten fight win streak in the featherweight division, beating a lot of good names and a lot of tough guys before getting his title shot, then getting it, you know, beating Aldo in Rio de Janeiro. He beat him. He went to his city. He went to the King's backyard and beat him pretty handily in Brazil, and then gave him an immediate rematch, and then beat him pretty handily again. And then, you know, he lost his title to Alex Volkanovski, but I don't think that changes the fact that, you know, while he lost twice to Volkanovski, I don't think that kills his legacy in the division, being that he's still very dominant, and he just came off, you know, another record-breaking performance against my man Calvin Kattar from Massachusetts. You know, he set an all-time striking record with that. You know, and I think he will be the champion again, you know, at some stage, maybe in the next year or two. I think he gets the belt again. So, yeah, I got Max Holloway as my featherweight GOAT.
I like the pick, but it's just one. I thought it came down between two guys, and that was Jose Aldo and Max Holloway. I know Max Holloway beat Aldo twice, but I was around during the WEC days. The one reason why I lean toward Aldo on this one is because while he was the champion in WEC and UFC, he compiled 11-3 record while he was the champ. Whereas Max Holloway was 4-2 during his title reign. Both of Max's losses came against Volkanovski, but you know, in my opinion, like I've been screaming on our show, I thought he won the second fight for sure. But for this topic, I'm going with Jose Aldo. Although he did lose to Max Holloway twice, but Aldo had such a long run through WEC and the UFC as a featherweight champ. During his time as champ, he was the most feared featherweight in his prime. He cleaned his division out. Basically, his game, he had a good game plan at the time during his reign. Well-rounded, that included vicious, vicious, vicious leg kicks with timely striking and having above-average ground game. Compared to Max Holloway, Max is basically a striker with good takedown defense. But I'm going to go with Jose, man. I just thought he just had a better all-around record. He had a better record while he was the champ. And you do have to give his longevity a nod, too. But, you know, a lot of people want to go back to him losing to McGregor. People want to go back to him losing twice to Max Holloway. But you're talking about three losses to two top guys. So, but I'm going to go with Jose, man. He compiled 11-3 record while he was a champ, winning 4 fight of the night bonuses, man. So I'm going to lean towards Jose.
All right.
Next topic. All right. What you got, Evan?
Well, just to give my take, I don't really like the GOAT conversation. I think it's a silly one, but for this, for just the argument's sake, I think I would take Jose as well. I don't know why. I do more research, but for some reason, my heart just says Jose. But we'll talk about that later. Moving on. Let's come
well,
to you guys with
up,
this one.
Hold up. I got to throw this out there, Keys. I had an honorable mention. Patricio Pitbull Freire out of Bellator is my honorable mention, bro.
Honorable mention as a featherweight coach?
Yeah.
Man, why is this guy always bringing up Pitbull, man? Every show, you're always bringing him up. People like love Pitbull. Every time, he even said that last time we were doing the pound for pound show, and he had, I think he had Pitbull in his pound for pound before he had Holloway or Dustin Poirier in his pound for pound. Man, what? Yo, Bellator's got to be. Yo, I know what's going on, Lee. I understand. Don't worry, I got you. I think Scott Coker is cutting you a check, man. I think he's cutting you a piece of the pie over there to get you to talk up his boy,
hey,
man.
Hey, you probably have never seen Patricio Pitbull fight, dog. If you was to see him fight, okay, makes sense. All right, Evan, your world, dog. All
right. This one is number 5, and the question is, the topic is it good or bad for the UFC to cherry-pick opponents for fighters? And the example would be Sugar Sean O'Malley coming back from his loss to Chito Vera. He fought Thomas Almeida, who once was a top fighter in the division, but now his next fight is going to be against Luis Smolka, who has not looked good as of late, and it's not competition. Lee, I would like for you to start this one.
I think my man Keys is going to go the other way. So I'm gonna play the bad guy on this one, man. I think this is a bad thing. Some would say that the only way a fighter can truly tell where they're at in their career is by fighting the best. But this train of thought is only true when you're talking about guys that are in the top 10. But most of these upcoming guys, they're not in the top 10. They're fighting their way to get in the top 15. So I think it can be a bad thing. But if a young fighter is put into a tough fight early in their career, it could possibly hurt their confidence and send their career to a tailspin. For example, Yair Rodriguez versus Frankie Edgar. The UFC rushed Rodriguez into a fight against Frankie Edgar. Edgar dominated Rodriguez, and then I want to say it hurt his confidence so bad they could barely book him fights. Also, putting young guys and girls in there against veteran fighters who are sometimes fighting for their livelihood against upstarts, this kind of forces the veterans to fight at a level that most young fighters have never experienced. Therefore, they don't know how to counteract that inside the octagon. Another example would be Johnny Walker versus Corey Anderson. The Johnny Walker hype train was roused up, had people on it, you know, got round-trip tickets, and then he ran into Corey Anderson, a veteran that was fighting to try to get into the title picture. Dominated Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker next fight, lost again. So the UFC could have basically kept Walker, you know, slow rolling up and, you know, have him pace himself to fighting the veterans. But and another bad thing is when the UFC put if the fighter is in a bad division or a division that isn't deep, they get cast in the big fights right away that they're not ready for. So I just think that all that can lead to disastrous things for some fighters. It could make some fighters, you know, take their training more seriously, make them get better in the ring. But I think creating favorable matchups just so they can, you know, get to the top fast, or the UFC look at them as upcoming stars, I just think that's a bad situation for the fighter.
Yeah, so I'm going to say this. I just had to look up your boy Pitbull's record, bro. I just had to look it up just because you wanted to say that I never watched him fight before. To that point, I actually did watch him fight before for about 30 seconds of the highlight of him when he KO'd Michael Chandler. That was the only time I've ever seen him fight. And I think I watched the clip from his last fight, too, when he fought the Sanchez guy and he choked him out in the first round. I want to say it was either that one or the fight before it. Yeah, he had a first-round KO versus Pedro Carvalho. That one I saw a clip from. So I have seen him fight, but probably not as much footage as you have. But when you look at Bellator, it's kind of funny, though, because one of the things that I look at his sure dog, and it's all green. This dude has only lost four times. He's 32-4. So he's, if this is all at featherweight, I mean, he's a pretty damn good featherweight. But I will say this at the same time, who has he really fought out of these guys that he fought? I don't know any of these guys. It looks like he fought Wilson Hayes, who's actually a flyweight. So I don't know where that goes for his featherweight conversation, because that's the only guy on here that I even know, and he's not even a featherweight. And then he fought, who else did he? I don't even see another guy in here. Benson Henderson is like way past his prime. I don't even really give that to. And he lost that fight, actually. He actually lost that fight to Benson Henderson. And then who else? I don't know any of these guys.
I want to say he got injured in that fight.
Yeah, so he lost to Benson. He beat Wilson Hayes, who's a flyweight. He beat Michael Chandler, so I give him a lot of stock for that one. He TKO'd Michael Chandler in the first round. So he gets a lot of stock for that one. And I know the Carvalho guy is supposed to be pretty good, and Juan Archuleta, I think, was a champion. He's supposed to be pretty good, too. So he has pretty much like three wins, and that's in his last four fights that I give him stock for, because those are supposed to be – I mean, Chandler, I think, is really good, and then Archuleta, Carvalho is supposed to be really good. I don't know who the hell Emmanuel Sanchez is. He beat that guy twice. I have no idea who that is, or any
okay,
of these
man,
other guys
he fought. Okay, you're not impressed with Pitbull. Okay, you're not impressed with Pitbull. Let's go.
Man, I'm just telling them the facts. I don't know what you're trying to get at. I'm just trying to tell the people the facts. He said he was the GOAT over Holloway, so I just had to,
no,
gotta show people.
I said he was honorable. No, I didn't say that. I said he was my honorable mention. Because my two were Aldo and Max Holloway. But I have Patricio Pitbull as an honorable mention.
All right. I couldn't let you put the wool over their eyes, man. You were trying to put the wool over their eyes. I see what you were doing.
I just think you didn't hear me right, but that's okay.
All right. We'll let that one go for now. We'll bring that back. But the other thing about the cherry – all right, so the next question, the cherry picking, right? So y'all know I had a rebuttal that one. But the cherry picking. So for guys that, so he, you know, he was talking about Johnny Walker. I mean, other cases where you see that is like Edmund Shabazin. I feel like he kind of got pushed to the top, and then now he's lost. I'm pretty sure he's on a 2-fight losing streak now, and that was pretty much like right once he started fighting top guys. I think it was like right once they gave him a top 10 guy. I think it was Derek Brunson. Derek Brunson dominated him and embarrassed him, and then they put him against Hermanson. I didn't see that fight, but I'm pretty sure they said Hermanson beat him pretty dominantly in that fight too. So that's another case of that, where you have a guy who comes in, and then he's either undefeated overall or he's undefeated in the UFC. He goes on a run against guys that really nobody's ever heard of before. And then they push him right to the top, and, you know what I'm saying, they kind of gave him fights the whole time that they knew he could win. But then when you actually put them in there against a guy that you don't know if he can win, that's the problem with doing stuff like that with guys. You know, I kind of rather see the approach that they took with Michael Chandler, where they made Michael Chandler. I like that approach better, because I like some people, you know, critique the fact that they gave Chandler, you know, the number 5 guy. Right when he came in. To rebuttal those people, I just want to tell you this. You know who else got a top 5 guy right when he came in? Justin Gaethje did. Justin Gaethje came in, and he got Michael Johnson, who I'm almost positive was the number 5 lightweight in the world at that time. And that was in his first fight. And I don't remember anybody saying that when Gaethje did it. So we'll leave that at that. But I do like that approach better. Come in and have a guy fight a top guy right away. Have them fight actual competition, so you're not building them up, you know, to their fans when they're really not at the level that their fans think they're at. You know, it's even kind of like Conor McGregor. When you look at his run at featherweight, who really did? I mean, he did beat some guys. I'm not going to discredit that. You know, he fought Diego Brandão. He fought, you know, a couple featherweight guys that were good at that time. But at the same time, you know, some of those wins were guys that I feel like he was kind of set up to, you know, they kind of set him up to get where he needed, where they wanted him to go. You know what I mean? He had Seaver he fought to basically then get the interim title shot, and everybody knew that he was going to beat Dennis Seaver, if you ask me. That was kind of like a squash match. And then you look at it after, I mean, he kind of had the perfect situation, you know, when he won, the lightweight title. He basically fought one of the only guys that is going to stand there in front of him and just, like, strike with him. So, that's the problem. I think cherry pick is not good for the fighter because, you know, you kind of let them build up a false confidence. And then you see situations like that when Johnny Walker goes and fights Corey Anderson, and all of a sudden all his confidence is stripped away from him when Corey Anderson just absolutely mauls him. So I think it's not good. I think they should keep it 100 with fighters and give them tough fights right off the bat.
All right, but what about this, though? Let's look at it another way, from another angle. Then we both looked at it from that angle. Let's look at it from the good side. Let's say that we as fans, like, y'all two are big Conor McGregor fans. Y'all got to grow with Conor as he was making his way up the UFC ladder. A lot of fans like to feel connected to fighters when they're on their way up. Let's say if Conor would have lost his first two fights, you guys, most of his fans would have been like, damn, what happened? What happened? If he would have fought top-tier guys right out the gate. So I think one thing about slow-rolling these guys is that it allows fans to go with fighters. It allows young fighters to strengthen their weaknesses. And allow them to work on other things, add things to their game. Like when me and you used to talk about Johnny Walker, our main thing was he hasn't been in a fight yet. Then once he got in a real fight, he didn't know what to do. So I think if you slow roll guys and girls, it lets fans grow with them. And it also gives them a chance to grow their brand in and out of the octagon. I know we as fans, we really care about the sport itself, but these fighters, they are trying to be brands. They are trying to do things after the octagon, you know, because nobody is going to fight their whole career. And one last thing that we need to take into consideration when most of these young fighters are given favorable matchups, most of them are training with inexperienced trainers and managers too nowadays, because there are so many fight camps springing up all around the world, and most of these trainers haven't been in tense fights, and they don't really know the ins and outs of, you know, what should I tell my fighter here, what should we do here. And I think it allowed the trainers to get a little bit more experience as the fighters get a little bit more experience, and I think you get a better product in the end if you do kind of take care of them, quote unquote.
All right.
Yeah, what do you think, bro?
I guess it depends. I think if a fighter has a big backing coming from, a certain promotion. Obviously, we mentioned Michael Chandler. He comes in, immediately gets top five. I think that makes sense because it's high risk, high reward. Because if he fights some random guy, just low rank top 15 and gets beat, well, now there goes all that investment. But you take the Dan Hooker round, take the chance, and he knocks him out in the first round. Well, now you got a star, and he gets the title shot, and blah, blah, blah. But I like the idea also of building the brand, letting the fighter get a chance to, embrace those lights. Because that's the thing, people, Johnny Walker, he just too fast, definitely too fast. Even Darren Till kind of got pushed too fast, He got one win over Cowboy. They give him Wonder Boy, controversial win, and then he gets submitted by Till and has not looked good since. But I think it's balance. It's definitely a balance. But if I may, let's bring it back. Keys, you mentioned in your discussion Conor McGregor, and with that, I think it's a perfect opportunity to bring up the question number four, which is, will we see the old Conor McGregor on July 10th?
So with that, you want me to go first?
Yeah, sure. Might as well.
Yeah.
All right. So this is what I'm going to tell you all, right? So this is perfect because I was tweeting this last night, and it was and it's perfect timing for us to have been doing a show tonight. So I watched – so I subscribed to ESPN Plus like 2 or 3 weeks ago, right? And I finally decided last night, I was like, I need to start utilizing ESPN Plus. Like, they got all the pay-per-views. Like, I need to go back and start watching a lot of these pay-per-view fights because I love pay-per-views. Like, I just love the feeling of watching these high-level fights. So I was like, all right, let me go back. Then I went to UFC, whatever one that was when they just did the rematch, Poirier and McGregor, whatever number that was. I watched that one, and this is what I'm going to tell you that I saw in that fight, right? I know a lot of y'all are high on Poirier right now, but I just gotta break your heart and tell you this truth, right? When you go back and watch that fight, and Lee, I think you should go back and watch it too. Poirier was getting outboxed so bad in that fight. He was taking so many big shots from every angle. He even got hit with the shoulder strike. I didn't even notice that he got hit with the shoulder strike when I was watching the fight. And that was probably because I was off the proper 12, and I made this cocktail mix to make a proper lemonade, and I was like, 30,000 feet in the air where portable electronics can no longer be used and have to be stored in the overhead cabin. So I didn't even know that the fight was on. I was just completely shattered. I had no idea that that fight was even on. So I was watching it, but I wasn't really watching it when it was live. But watching it back, I feel like Poirier was getting boxed to pieces, and I feel like the only reason that he didn't get stopped in that fight is because he had the calf kicks. I think if Poirier, I don't think the takedowns would have done much for him. Even if he continued to take Conor down, I don't think they would have done much for him in that fight because he's not that dominant to where he's going to hold Conor down. Conor got his back right to the fence when he got taken down, and he pressed his weight off the fence, and he got back to his feet, almost instantly when Poirier took him down. The calf kicks, I feel like, saved Poirier in that fight. That's what wore Conor down, and, he's worried about the calf kicks. He's worried about, the head strikes and the boxing. He got caught with a shot, and he got put away. But I think if it was purely that boxing match and you didn't have the calf kicks, now I'm not saying Poirier shouldn't throw the calf kicks. Absolutely do it. This is MMA. But all I'm saying is that purely in the boxing, that looks like a mismatch in there, if you ask me. That looked like a bad, bad, bad mismatch. And I think in this next fight, you're going to see Conor adjust to the calf kicks. You're going to see him checking the calf kicks. And I think he's going to absolutely dominate Poirier in the trilogy. I think a lot of people are going to be hurt after this fight. So, yes, I think we see the old Conor, if that answers the question.
Well, yes, I'm going to cheat a little bit on this one, so I'm going to need you guys to follow me. This is actually a tough question to answer. What is the old Conor McGregor? He was a guy that had a very solid striking game with little to no ground game, and he had decent takedown defense. If we talk about that guy, then yes, we will see him in the trilogy fight against Dustin. Who is the new Conor? I guess the new Conor and the old Conor are the same guy. What's he really added to his game outside of improving his cardio? I venture to say nothing, which is really a bad thing in today's MMA, as today's fighters are more rounded and can do more things inside the octagon. Fighters like Conor, who don't grow their game, are getting exposed these days. We talked about this before, Keys. And I kind of swayed you to my side as we got deeper into knowing each other. Fighters should be able to come to the octagon with a plan A, B, and maybe even a C. This allows them to be able to change course during a fight depending on what their opponent is doing and make certain adjustments that could lead to a win, i.e. Stipe versus DC in the second fight. Stipe decided on his corner, say, hey, man, let's use the body shots. Stipe started grinding to the body and knocked DC out. I think the one thing Conor can do in this fight, like Keith said, was he needed to start checking kicks, protect his legs more. But I think we will see the old the old Connor because he hasn't really did anything to make me say, wow, that's a new wrinkle in this game. So I think we see the new Connor and the old Connor as they all one and the same. How you feel about that, Keys?
Oh, I thought Evan was going to give his take on it. I mean, so what I think of it is this, is that I think the most advanced Connor that we've seen, I think the Connor that showed the most diversity, I think, in his entire career was probably either the Alvarez fight or the Khabib fight. Those are the two fights to me, and I would probably lean towards the Khabib fight. I think he showed the most diversity as far as, you know, being able to defend in different situations than what he's typically used to. But most of the time, if you look at the Alvarez fight, I mean, he showed really strong takedown defense, but that was the reason why we didn't see Alvarez try to wrestle in that fight, because he just couldn't even, like, get half of a takedown off. He couldn't get anywhere near Connor. So that's one aspect of the old Connor that I think that, you know, some of us are questioning, is if you'll see that. Also, in the Khabib fight, I mean, his takedown, he stopped a lot of Khabib's takedowns. He stopped many takedowns, if you look up the stats. And, you know, there was even points when he was, you know, halfway taken down, and he was still defending the position and trying to posture up while he was, like, half taken down. But what I'm saying is, and that was mostly in the first and second round. I understand the later rounds, he was pretty much on his back. I understand that. I'm saying in the first two rounds. But, old Connor, I like your point about that they're the same guy, the old Connor and the new Connor. I think what most people are looking at when they say that is the confidence, the trash talk, the ego. I mean, the looseness when he's in the cage, you know, the fluidity in his movement, the stance, the footwork, you know, that bouncy style footwork that he used to have in a lot of his fights, which he kind of got away from. You know, he kind of got away from that. You know, his stance was more of a boxing stance. You know, his shoulders before, he used to have more of a wide stance. He used to have his hands kind of out a little bit further, a bit more spread apart, so his chin was open. But he was so elusive that he could afford to have his chin be wide open. Now, as he's gone further on, it's like, you know, ever since he had the boxing match with Floyd, it's like, it seems like he's gone more into the actual boxing and not and further away from the MMA style. And he's not accounting for all these different factors. And I think that's why, you know, and such as the leg kicks, like in such as the takedowns, like, you know, you could tell that he was not expecting to be taken down by Poirier, because he literally went right down. Like, if you compare that to his Khabib fight, it looks like two totally different guys, because he was expecting Khabib to shoot, you know, instantly and early and often. So when you see him, you know, you always saw him looking like he was ready to defend the takedown, like why he got caught with that big shot in the Khabib fight, because he was, you know, checking low, and then Khabib actually catches him with a right hand or a left hand. He wasn't expecting him in the Poirier fight. But, yeah, I think that's the problem. You know, the new Connor, I hope we see more of an old Connor, because the new Connor is too focused on just boxing. Like, even in the Cerrone fight, he looked like he was mainly there to have a stand-up fight. And he has had that style, but he's always had the tools ready to respond to other situations if they came up. Like, when in the Chad Mendes fight, you could tell he was preparing for a guy like that. Like, he's like, okay, I know I'm fighting a guy that likes to wrestle, so let me have these – let me know how to answer, you know, how to reply when this situation comes up. And he got back to his feet, you know, over and over and over, and he butchered Chad Mendes on the feet like he said he would. And I think that's the kind of Connor that a lot of us are talking – that's the one that we want to see when we say old Connor. We want to see a guy that's going to be more of an MMA fighter rather than just a boxer. a guy that's going to be confident, trash talk, you know, get back to what made you great. Don't try to be, you know, shaking hands with everybody and, you know, this, that, and the third, because at the end of the day, you're fighting in a cage. Like, you don't need to shake everybody's hand. Like, I understand that the sport of MMA is, you know, based around respect and integrity and pride and, you know, this and that, and that's all well and good. But at the end of the day, if you ask me, like, you know, you look at a guy like Jeremy Stevens or Jakar Close, you know, when he pulled Jeremy Stevens' neck in, like, he definitely didn't need to do that. But as far as him getting very close to Stevens' face for the face-off, I can understand, you know, partially where his head was at when he did that. Because you are fighting in a cage, and you might as well get yourself a little bit intensified to prepare for that. Because you're going to get hit. Regardless of how friendly you are to that person, he's in there to defeat you. He or she is in there to defeat you. So you will take damage. So that's what I'm trying to say. I think that's what want, is the O'Connor is an MMA fighter, not a boxer.
But you say Connor is an MMA fighter, but only thing he really does well in the cage is use his reach advantage for his jab and his punches. It ain't like he can take somebody down and submit them. So what other part of MMA is in his game? I mean, like I said, he got decent takedown defense, but it ain't like he's a world-class wrestler or a world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. So he's basically still a one-trick pony.
Yeah, so I feel like I already answered that. You know, it's not about whether he's going to go and submit somebody or whether he's going to try to take Poirier down. Actually, I think that'd be hilarious if he opens up the fight and actually takes Poirier down. I would actually love to see that. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that would really throw Poirier off, and I think that would shock everybody in the entire arena if Connor shoots and takes Poirier down first thing in the fight and just mauls him. I think that would be the most shocking moment that's happened probably in the past, like, 5 years of UFC fights. You know, more shocking than that 5-second KO that we watched, if Connor would have shoot and take Poirier down.
That's funny because when we did this topic, I was like, man, it'd be funny as hell if he came out there and shot on Dustin in the first 30 seconds of the fight. I said Dustin would probably be so thrown off that it'll probably affect him. But Evan, where you at on this, dog?
You know, it's an interesting topic, but honestly, I really don't even have a say. I really hope it's a competitive fight and we get like 5 rounds. Honestly, I would love to see a 5-round war. I would love to see, you know, the Diaz rematch, just mix everything up, just have a good fight. So nothing for me on that one, but hoping for a good fight. But let's keep it going. We got two more topics to go, and we are going to go with number 3, which is fighter pay has been an issue. Who is more to blame, Zuffa, the UFC, or the fighters?
Yeah, I say you go start this one off. This is a you topic.
All right, man. I'm gonna switch up on y'all. Y'all know that I did write an article saying that the UFC don't pay their number one asset, and that's the fighters. But on this topic here, just I'm gonna blame the fighters, man. I'm gonna need y'all to ride with me on this for a minute. Everybody know fighters are independent contractors who are basically in business for themselves. So being that they're independent contractors, fighters gonna always do what's best for them in their career. But I think fighters need to become more aware of their worth and realize they are the number one asset. And without them, the UFC doesn't have a product. First thing fighters need to do is negotiate better contracts. And the first thing they should do is when you sign your contract, don't sign a five to eight fight deal. Sign 3-fight contracts. Why do I say that? Because when you do 3 fights, guess what? You're right back up to renegotiate your contract. So you can be possibly make more money when you sign your next contract. And it also gives you the choice of flexibility because you can go to another organization. You can take the highest bidder. Stop signing these 5 to 8 fight deals. Sign shorter deals. Also, I think fighters need to get better management, meaning agents. They need to get agents that are known for hardballing for their clients and other sports. If you look at some of these top agents in football, basketball, hockey, baseball, they get all their clients paid because they are looking out for the best interest of their client. They're not looking out for the best interest of the UFC and Zuffa. They want to make sure their client is taken care of. And I think if you get a hardballing agent, you can also try to negotiate with the UFC to pay your camp fees, you know, in your contract. The UFC doesn't pay for fighters' camp fees, and meaning that when a fighter gets their pay purse, first thing they got to do is pay their camp fees. They got to pay their sparring partners. They got to pay their medical. They got to pay their gym time. If you can get that negotiated in your contract, guess what that means? You get more take-home pay out of your fight purse. And lastly, I know this is going to be negatively looked at, but I think fighters need to get together and become a collective instead of looking at themselves as independent. Everybody look at the word union as a negative because they look at football, basketball, baseball, hockey because of strikes and things like that. But guess what? Sometimes when you have strikes, you get the company to come to the table and you get some of your demands met and some of you don't get met. But I think if they become a union, fighters could possibly get lifelong medical and maybe even a possible pension. So I think fighters have to take some responsibility for the UFC shortchanging them. There are things they can do better and get better at. As long as they stay complacent, the UFC will keep these pay issues in their benefit.
Yeah, so my thing with it is this, right? So for the interest of time, I mean, we don't have too much time left, and I think we have another topic after this. What did you say?
We got about 15 minutes.
Yeah, so but I know we have another topic. So just in the interest of time, I'm going to try to keep mine, you know, relatively short like you did. So what I think is this. You know, I agree with pretty much everything you said. You know, I think a lot of guys, you know, for example, Jeremy Stephens, you know, there's really no reason why a guy like Jeremy Stephens should have, like, over 20 fights in the UFC, and then he's going up, you know, fighting guys that they're trying to make a name for off of his name, you know, for example, when they had him fight Zabit. And when you look at the disclosed payouts, Zabit made a double, or maybe even, I think he made, like, double what Jeremy Stephens made with, and he only had, like, I think, you know, not even double digits. He probably had like 3, 4, maybe 5 fights in the UFC. Jeremy Stephens has 20-plus fights, and I think I want to say he made like 60,000. I want to say it was 64, maybe 65, 68,000 to fight Zabit with 20 fights. So obviously I disagree with that, but at the same time, I think both are to blame. I think the UFC and Zuffa are to blame for trying to lowball fighters with these kinds of contracts. You know, I don't think they should be – you know, trying to lowball these fighters. You know, when you have a, I think it should be something like what you said, like you should have a tier, and it's like if you're, you know, 10 fights in, once you get 5 fights in, you should have a big contract increase. Once you get 10 fights in, I think you should have another big contract increase. And what I'm trying to say is, you know, $25,000 contract increase per fight, you know, maybe $30,000 contract, maybe $50,000, maybe even $50K, you know, per every 5 fights, you know, and if you, you know, if you're a guy who finishes fights, I mean, you're already getting bonuses anyway, but, you know, maybe they even put an incentive for that, you know, the, if, you know, guys like Ngannou, when, you know, when you're saying Ngannou's last, you know, 3 or 4 fights have amounted to like 2 minutes of octagon time, he should be getting, like, special bonuses for that. Like, he shouldn't just be getting performance of the night bonus and, like, all this other stuff. Like, he should be getting special accolades for the type of fighter that he is. No doubt in my mind, because people flock to the UFC for guys like that. Like, guys like Ngannou bring in a shit ton of fans, a lot of fans, and that's because he has a very attractive style, you know, and I think that would give the fighters more incentive. You know, guys like Jeremy Stephens, if you look back in Jeremy Stephens' early career, I was watching some of his early highlights the other night. If you look back in his early career, he was finishing most of his fights. And I feel like if, you know, maybe you would see a different Jeremy Stephens today if they actually compensated him for his work back then. You know, I think you would see a more hardworking guy. You would see, you know, a guy that probably pushes for the finish more. And he still pushes for the finish. But I would say, you know, Jeremy Stephens plays it a bit more conservative. Regardless of the fact, I think it's both sides' fault. UFC and Zuffa should stop lowballing, give fighters better contracts, you know, for every 5 fights, for every 10 fights. So I think they should up the pay. I agree with the fighters' union. The fighters need to come together. But the fighters also need to market themselves. I think fighters need to realize that any business needs to market themselves, okay? And I work in marketing, so I will advocate for this every day. If you have anything, a product, a skill, or a business, if you do anything well and you're trying to have someone pay for your services in any way, you need to have marketing. And I think it could go in both ways. The UFC does a good amount to market their fighters. I still think they could do more. But I think the fighters could also do a lot more. I think the fighters, there's a lot of guys who just want to go in there and fight and not do any interviews. You know, when they do get asked a question, it's super bland, extremely boring. Like, they it's almost like they didn't eat. It's almost like me, you know, when I don't eat dinner before one of our shows. Like, it seems like they didn't eat that day, some of these fighters, when they get up to the press conference. And I'm like, man, where the hell did y'all get these guys? Like, I could talk better at the press conference than a lot of these fighters. Like, they sound so much stage fright when they're up on stage at the press conference. And I don't think that helps their popularity. And then in turn, that doesn't help them get better contracts. You know, guys are up there extremely boring and just think that they should just go fight and just get paid more and more and more to just fight. And I just don't think that's the case. I think you need to have some marketing to put next to your product, you know? And that's my take on that.
Yeah, I wanted to throw this out here real quick before Evan give his take on it. When I was doing the research on this topic, I did find something that was actually very heartwarming. You know, on the Reebok deal ended this year, and Venom took over as a UFC apparel partner starting April 2021. Although the Venom contract is shorter and not as big and lucrative as the one with Reebok, the majority of the money from the Venom deal will go to the fighters. Unlike the Reebok deal, where most of the money went to the UFC, unless you were a fighter that signed with Reebok. So I think Venom did a good thing with this to make most of the money go to the fighters instead of the UFC, and I like that. And I also agree with the thing that you said about fighters becoming more marketable and market yourself. In today's world, just this show alone, we push our show. We push it on Twitter. We got our own Twitter account. You know, when we do a show, we push out on Twitter. Sometimes I even put our show out on my – actually, I do have it in my LinkedIn bio and my Instagram bio. You have to – market yourself, man. Nobody should love you more than you love yourself. But I guess the bottom line to this debate is there's no clear-cut solution on this issue. But the UFC and the fighters need to do better. And I think the UFC need to realize that the fighters are a number one asset. And once they do that, I think this will become a moot issue. How you feel, Evan?
I agree. Both points, everything you guys said, 100%. It's on everyone. Everyone it has to be a factor. It's not one person's fault, not one person's issue. Everyone's got to get in there. Obviously, the one thing I'm going to say, and I've said this a million times, it's my pinned tweet, but just for the fighter pay topic, when we talk about champions, all champions should be making $1 million base pay. It's kind of ridiculous that they're not. You look at how much money boxers make, and yet you look at Valentina Shevchenko, who absolutely dismantles her opponents, is making like 100 to show and 100 to win. It's absolutely pathetic. But that's a totally different issue. All right, moving on.
Hey, Evan, hold on, Evan. I want to ask you a question about that million. Why are you dead set on $1 million? Because you have been saying $1 million since this became an issue. Why is $1 million your base salary for champions? I know why, but I want you to tell the people why.
I just feel the champion is your fighter billboard, basically. Like, they're the ones doing all the media. They're the ones in the front lines. They're your marketing tool, your billboard, as I've said that. Like, they're the ones that are going to get the fans interested in. And when you have your champions who are supposed to make the divisions exciting, you know, everything. Like, if they're champions, they're supposed to be happy, you know, fighting and being a challenger and then finally becoming a champion, and somehow the UFC just doesn't see that, and they're making nothing for it. And for the million sake, I think that's just the fair number. Personally, to add on to this, I think when a fighter becomes the challenger for the title shot, when they get a title shot, they immediately should get a new contract, and their base pay should be $500,000, because you need to market this person as valuable enough to be able to defeat the champion. Like how they market anyone who fights Nunes, they market them as somewhat, you know, oh, she could totally do it. But they never do. And they're making nothing to get their bottoms whooped. So it's just, it's ridiculous. I think the fighters obviously need to be paid more, but in the champion conversation, $1 million base pay, and then no show money. I mean, not win bonus, just base. You show up, you get your $1 million. If you want to go and fight, like, you know, safe, whatever, that's your choice. But you are a champion. You did the work. You grinded, and you finally got to be the champion. You deserve the $1 million. That is my opinion.
Thank you.
And I'm going to add something to that, too. So this is a point just to add to it. I'm not going to build up – I'm not really building on what you said, but I'm going to add something valuable to it. So – you know, Lee was, you know, me and Lee were texting the other day, and he was like, you know, I don't value, he basically said, you value pay-per-views and I don't. He was like, you think that pay-per-view buys are more of a factor, you know, for a fighter than I do. He was like, I think it's about winning fights. And I think that's partially true. You know, I think it is. And, you know, but I do think they should market themselves more so that they can get more buys. But at the same time, I understand now what he was saying about pay-per-view buys not being as prominent as the UFC and a lot of the media and, you know, people like us make them seem sometimes. And this is why. I never did the math on this before, but I did the math on it right after he said that to me. I was sitting in my car, you know, I was about to go do some errands, and I said, hold up, let me think about this and come up with, okay, what was the last pay-per-view that I had, right? So I thought about 300,000. Right, I say, imagine one of these fighters who people don't deem to be a draw, right, because being a draw is such a big deal. Take the numbers that they probably would have did. Let's say it was 300,000 pay-per-view buys. You know, there's some that do 150, some do 200, but that doesn't even matter, because when you see what the math comes out to, you'll understand. So let's even make it 200,000 pay-per-view buys. Let's be fair to people. And let's go a low-end fighter. Okay, a champion who people don't consider a draw. Let's say they do 200,000 pay-per-view buys. Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to do 200,000 times the pay-per-view price. 200,000 times, I want to say the UFC's pay-per-view price is roughly $60, maybe $65,
$70. Yeah, I would say, what, they $59.95? And if you get it in HD, it's $65.
All right, so let's just say it's $65, because the McGregor pay-per-view, they tend to make it $69.99, and then sometimes they'll give you the package with ESPN Plus, and they'll say it's you know, $59.99. Okay, cool. Let's go in the middle. Let's say 65. So we're going to do 200,000 pay-per-view buys times $65. You want to know how much money that comes out to?
Oh, I'm listening.
$13 million. That's 13. Okay, so hold on. That's $13 million just in digital sales. So you're not even including the live gate. And most times, even these fighters that people say that they claim are not a draw sell out the arena. So now you have to add the live gate to the $13 million that you just made just on pay-per-views. And mind you, this is a 200,000 pay-per-view, quote-unquote, non-draw. This is a $200,000 pay-per-view buys fighter. I'm not even talking about the realistic numbers. Usman, you know, his last pay-per-view versus Masvidal, I think they might have did a million, but the one before that, even with Burns, people say Usman's not a draw. Okay, cool. Usman sold 500,000. They said roughly 500,000. Do the math. So I'm going to do 500,000 times $65. You know how much money that comes to? $32.5 million. And you're telling me that without even adding the live gate, without even adding all the merchandise, without even adding all the, you know, advertising money and, you know, the gear that the fighters are wearing, they're getting paid from the Venom deal, they're getting paid from the ESPN deal, they're getting paid from the broadcast show. Oh, my goodness. They are probably making hundreds of millions of dollars per event. You're telling me that they cannot pay their champion $1 million of that money. That is total BS. That is complete. And you know what? We don't really swear on the show, but I have to. That is complete bullshit is what that is. That is the biggest crock of shit that I think I've ever seen in a while in my life. In years and years and years of talk about the UFC, that might have been the biggest realization that I've ever had about the UFC. The fact that you could sell 500,000 pay-per-view buys and somebody like me in 2017 would be on Twitter adding Lee, you know, adding Lee and saying that, you know, his fighter who did 500,000 buys or Demetrius Johnson who did 200,000 buys, you know, doesn't deserve better pay. The fact that I had the audacity to say that is kind of ridiculous. And I'm kind of laughing at my old self right now for even saying that. Because my old self didn't do the math on how much money was actually involved in this. And that was before the ESPN deal. I was saying that before the ESPN deal. If you add the live gate, now that COVID is, you know, fans are coming back, add the live gate and add all the money they're getting from being on ESPN, man, yep. Y'all got to stop it. The ESPN Plus subscriptions, every champion should be making $1 million. They maybe should be even making $1 million to show and $1 million to win. And that's the end of my take.
I love it.
All right.
I freaking love it. All right. Now, this
was a great show, and we only got 2 minutes left. I just want to leave you guys with this since we're about to go off. We'll catch the last topic next time. But just for the final minutes of the show, a fight was just announced. I don't know if you guys saw it on Twitter, if you guys have been on Twitter in the last 5-10 minutes, but – Max Holloway is back, and he's going to fight Yair Rodriguez in July.
I think this is a bad matchup for Yair Rodriguez because Yair thinks he's a tough guy, and I think that this is one of those fights where Yair Rodriguez needs to do what Frankie Edgar did to him. Make this fight boring by trying to take Max down and submitting him. If Yair Rodriguez try to come in there and be a tough guy and stand and bang with Max Holloway, he will get pieced up, and I see Max probably landing probably, what, 500 strikes on him, 500 to 600 strikes on him. So I think Rodriguez needs to he definitely needs to swallow his pride in this fight. And if on his camp, only thing we're working on is takedowns, shoots, feints, everything. His head movement needs to be on point. But I really think if he comes in there and he doesn't have a plan B, he will get knocked out.
Is that on the July 10th card?
No, it's July 17th. It's the main event.
Lame, lame, lame. I like that they want to put him in the main event, and that's probably why they did it. But I still would kind of want to see that on the same card as Poirier and McGregor, if I'm being honest. I think I'd still want to see it on the same card, bro. Who doesn't want to see Max Holloway and Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier all fight on the same card? Come on, bro. Come on, bro.
It'll happen. It'll happen one day. Well, it'll happen one day, I'm sure. Before all is said and done, it'll happen. But it's 9:31. Just want to say a few things, and then we will pass to you guys. But, just want to say thank you guys for listening. This was a great show. I think we tackled the topics incredibly. You know, tons of fun on this one. And, you know, just for the fans so they know, there are no fights this weekend. That's why we did not do any predictions. Next card, is the June 6th card. It's pretty weak, I'm not going to lie, but we'll talk about that another time. Just thank you for listening. And, gentlemen, closing words.
Yeah, I usually get the second one. I like to let Lee close it out. So I'll get the second up at bat. But, yeah, so thank you, everybody, for listening. You know, I always say that. Thank you. I appreciate people that listen to the show, even people that just add us on Twitter and like to say that they're going to call into the show but then don't. I appreciate you, too. And hit us up on Twitter at LKE Real Talk or at K Mahoney with 4 Ys or at any one of our Twitters, hit us up at LKE Real Talk. That's where I mainly tweet and most of our content relating to the show from. But you can hit us up on any one of our Twitter. Everybody have a good rest of your week. And that's it.
Oh, man, this was really fun, man. Maybe next time we have a Keys and Evan debate, and then I'll moderate, and then you have me and Evan. You know, maybe we'll try to institute this maybe once a month in our show, because I like this format. I think it gives us, you know, other options and, you know, it gives us a little more back and forth. You know, I think tonight we kind of sort of agreed on some things, but at the same time is we didn't know where the other person was going. So, you know, it's still fun. Maybe me and Keys will talk about the best division in UFC on Twitter. Maybe we'll talk about that on Twitter. We can debate that on Twitter like we used to do back in the day. But thanks, Evan, for moderating. Thanks, Keys, for being a willing participant and doing this show with me. I just thought it would be fun to go back to how we started. But to end the show, I know we went over. You know, everybody take care of yourself. You know, practice social distancing, see what coronavirus is out there. Say this every week. If you want to get vaccinated, that's a personal decision. That's your choice. I'm still wearing my mask in public. That's just for my safety. 2021, positive people, positive energy, positive results. That being said, everybody have a nice weekend. No fights this week, thank God. I think the UFC is kind of watering down their product. Especially like Evan said, with his next card that's come up, that's probably super weak, but we'll talk about that next week. Everybody have a great weekend. Thank you for listening. Lee, Keys, and Evan, Real Talk, 203 signing off. And as always, the close of the show, we end on a peace.